This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. For many years, social scientists warned us of the dire consequences of overpopulation. Too many humans, they said, would suck the earth dry in a matter of decades. Well, there's good news and bad news. Though resources are still being strained to cope with our billions, birth rates are dropping around the world, and the global population is now expected to peak late this century and then start falling. The bad news is that some countries' economies are already struggling to cope with the consequences of fewer babies. Germany, Russia, Italy, and Japan, for example. The rest of the world, including the United States, may not be far behind. In a new book called The Empty Cradle, Philip Longman argues that Americans generally want more kids but can't afford them, that shrinking birth rates will affect both national politics, the fastest growing portion of the population is the most religious, and U.S. power and influence around the world. Later in the program, jazz, film scores, and Broadway become eligible for the Pulitzer Prize in Music. But first, The Empty Cradle. How much have economic or social pressures shaped your decision about how many kids to have? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Philip Longman is with us here in Studio 3A, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Great to be here, Neil.
You say you're not surprised that Americans perceive overpopulation as a big problem. Why not?
Well, we all grew up with the great predictions of a population bomb. I suppose it may be in part because many of us believed those predictions. They didn't come true. Not that that's the only reason why fertility rates are falling around the world. And they are falling around the world. It's not just a Western phenomenon. In all forms of government, in Christian countries, in Confucian countries, and especially in Islamic countries, birth rates are falling very dramatically. They're falling in the third world faster than they're falling here, to the point that many third world countries are going to wind up having an older age population structure than the United States does within the next 50 years.
And where is population still growing at this point?
Well, world population is still growing by 75 million a year. That's a lot. Most of it is in sub-Saharan Africa and in the Middle East. You know, there's this phenomenon of population momentum. When you have an era of very high fertility, which we did have through much of the 20th century, even when birth rates go down, that still leaves a large number of people of childbearing age. And so population has a certain momentum. It continues to grow, but albeit at a slower and slower rate. Bear in mind, though, that same mathematics works on the other side, that after a point, population begins to decrease at a compound rate. And we're already seeing that starting to happen in countries like Italy and Japan, where they are facing the prospect of losing as much as a third of their population in the next 50 years, simply because there's not enough women of childbearing age.
There was some concern that this would happen rapidly in the United States as well, though recent statistics seem to be more sunny on this point, or at least from the population growth point of view, that immigration and greater population, birth rate than expected, were boosting the U.S. population at a steady rate.
Yeah, although some of the statistics are a little deceiving. I mean, there has been a modest increase in the birth rate of Native Americans, Native-born Americans, since the 70s, but it's very modest. Black Americans are having considerably fewer children than before, to the point that there's really no difference between the black and white birth rate. Hispanics are the only major ethnic group in the United States that's still producing at above replacement rates, and Hispanic fertility is declining quickly. More to the point is what's happening in the third world, because the way we've managed to maintain our fertility as high as we have is through high immigration. The recent immigrants have large numbers of children. Many serve as nannies, which enables other people to have children. But when we look at a place like Mexico, for example, the very dramatic decline in fertility that's happened there is such that whereas the United States will see its median age increase by about 5 years from 35 to 40 by mid-century, Mexico in that period is going to be aging by 20 years. In other words, four times the rate of the United States, and ending up with an older population than the U.S. has. What does that mean for Mexican immigration to the United States? Well, we can't be sure, but if you look at the example of Puerto Rico, for example, there is no net immigration from Puerto Rico to the mainland anymore. And presumably that's because Puerto Rican fertility has declined to the point that the island produces enough jobs and there's no particular demand to come here.
What is the mechanism that leads to lower rates of birth in this country?
Well, historically, it's been urbanization. When people move from farms to cities, children go from being an economic asset to an economic liability. The opportunity cost of children is perpetually rising.
What's the opportunity cost?
That means what you have to give up in order to be a good parent.
The amount of time one of the other parent, usually the mother, stays home.
Right. In a cultural regime like the 1950s, many women didn't have many opportunities besides staying home with having children, so the opportunity cost of having children was low.
Low for June Cleaver.
Yeah. But for June Cleaver's daughter, she could be president of Harvard or whatever, and she has to give up a lot to have kids. And even if you have a job in a sweatshop, there is some opportunity cost to having children that didn't exist before when you worked side by side with your children in the village.
So the economic incentive to have children has vanished?
Yeah, that's another part of it, is that so you have this opportunity cost, but also historically, parents have realized all kinds of dividends through having kids, not the least of which was the prospect for support in old age. We have gradually, through Social Security, Medicare, and the private pension system generally, harvested all the returns that parents create by investing in their kids and divvied them up across the population. So parents basically get no return above what they'd otherwise get for having kids, and other people get to free ride on their investment in children. That investment, meanwhile, gets higher and higher because the economy requires more and more education. That means many people aren't even done with their education before their own fertility begins to decline. It means that when they do have kids, they have to raise enormous sums to get them through college. All in all, it's just a very bad financial deal at the moment.
Our number, if you'd like to join our conversation with Philip Longman, the author of The Empty Cradle, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, our email address, totn@npr.org. Cynthia joins us from San Antonio, Texas.
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to let you know that I'm an educated Hispanic woman, never been married, and because of this issue, I have decided to adopt two children. I have a 15-year-old and a 19-month-old, and one of them's Mexican and the other one is Chinese. And it's something that I've always thought that I would do in my life, to adopt children, because I've never had a biological urge to have one, but I also felt it was the responsible thing to do.
Responsible in which side of the issue are you concerned about?
The overpopulation issue.
The overpopulation issue.
Of course.
And so you thought it was your responsibility. One way to address it was to adopt these children, which is a wonderful thing to do, Cynthia.
Sure.
Philip, many, many Americans are adopting children from all walks of life, people like Cynthia.
Well, I'm an adoptive parent myself, so I feel some solidarity there. But I think, again, to what is driving down fertility rates, I think a lot of us who have adopted children because, for one reason or another, we waited around too long to have biological children. That is certainly what happened to me. And there's many reasons for that. Some of them might be characterized as selfishness. Some of them might be characterized as the real and daunting economic circumstances that young people in our society face as they try and get their careers on track just at the time when nature wants them to have kids. It's very hard to reconcile.
It's very hard to reconcile. I'm a professor, and at the time that my tenure clock was ticking down, my biological clock was doing the same. And so it just made it impossible for me to even consider it. But in addition to this, I also didn't ever really have this need.
Cynthia, thanks very much for the call, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Bill from Kansas City.
Yes, I'm wondering where we see, where you can show me evidence of, in this country, of less population growth. You go to all the suburbs, they're still putting up houses, they're still putting up apartments. You go out west, you go back east, the suburbs are just growing like mad. The inner cities aren't exactly blowing away. When is it going to show up? You know, for instance, what part of the countries are showing a negative growth or a zero growth, for that matter?
Well, actually, quite near to you, Bill. You say you're in Kansas?
Yes.
Well, the Great Plains, you know, Nebraska, that whole area has fewer people in it today than in the 1920s.
Yes.
And that's a good kind of natural experiment in what happens to economies or what can happen to them when their populations begin to shrink. I mean, I'm sure you know the territory. It's shuttered storefronts and empty schools and overfilled nursing homes. It's not a very pretty picture.
You don't see that much. You see that a little bit in the small towns, but that's a small percentage of the total when you go to the bigger areas where there are jobs, where there are health services and so forth.
Well, you're right. We still are a growing country for now, on the whole, and we will be for quite some time. But with that growth also comes aging, because we're not producing enough kids. And so what you'll see is fewer and fewer kids, more and more old people, more and more strain on budgets, less resources available for new energy technologies and environmental mitigation. So it's a good thing, I think, that population is modulating, but with this good thing comes this other thing called population aging that creates a lot of new challenges.
Also, one other thing in some of those areas you mentioned, like through the middle part of Nebraska and Kansas, a lot of that degrowth or smaller growth is due to large industrial farms coming in. You don't have the every person on a square mile that can come into town, into the small town, and shop.
Right. Well, yep. But for whatever the reason, the drought would have to be among them, too. You see the effect.
Yep. Bill, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
One of the things you argue in the book, though, is that some of the economic impacts of this are going to get more and more pronounced as time goes on, and there are fewer young consumers, and also you argue an aging population, and a lot of people have written about that, is a less entrepreneurial, a less risky, risk-taking population.
Right. Well, London School of Economics and other folks have done surveys of entrepreneurialism around the world, the levels of people in different countries who are starting new businesses. And it turns out there's almost a perfect correlation between countries that have large numbers of retirees to their work base and low rates of entrepreneurship. So, for example, Japan and France are among the least entrepreneurial countries in the world and also the most aged. You know, it makes sense when you think about it. When people get older, they can't take as many risks with their careers or with their savings, and so they have to become more risk averse.
And another aspect of this is declining birth rates would be a decline in U.S. global power, which you call the Private Ryan syndrome.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're at the stage now where certainly most Western European countries or families, if they have a child, it's an only child most of the time, and certainly an only son. And so there's necessarily more aversion to putting that son in harm's way and more reluctance to ship kids off to the military. You know, this may be a great thing in the end if aging societies become so risk-averse with their children, we just don't fight wars anymore. I don't think that's necessarily part of the downside of this. But and certainly the United States is not aging more rapidly than countries like China, which is actually, you know, it has an even worse population problem. So maybe population will bring us peace. I don't know.
We'll have more with Philip Longman and with one of his critics when we come back from a short break. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the effects of a slower population growth, which could, if projections are accurate, eventually mean a decline in population, not just in this country, but around the world. Philip Longman is with us. He's the author of The Empty Cradle, How Falling Birth Rates Threaten World Prosperity and What to Do About It. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Of course, you're invited to join us. Did economics play any role in your decision to about having kids or not? Did you make different decisions than your parents did or your grandparents because of finances? Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's bring Representative Peter Kostmeier into the conversation, a former congressman from Bucks County, Pennsylvania, currently the president of the Population Connection. He's also with us here in Studio 3A. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
And you argue in response to Philip Longman's theories that there doesn't have to be bad economic results as a result of a lower birth rate.
Well, I think the two central points which Philip Longman makes in this book are absolutely indisputable, and that is that people are having fewer kids, and at least partially as a result of that, the population is getting grayer or getting older. Where we disagree, and it's a very fundamental disagreement, is whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. He thinks it's a bad thing. I think it's a very good thing. As he said a moment ago, the world is growing by about 75 million people a year. I live in New York City, and the world grows by another New York City every 6 weeks. So I think that population stabilization, people being able to control their own population, is a very good thing. I think it's good from the standpoint of reproductive rights. I think it's good from the standpoint of the economy. I think it's good from the standpoint of the environment. So I don't disagree with his facts. I think his facts are right. I disagree very strongly with his conclusion. We ought to be celebrating what he's bemoaning.
Well, Philip, you do celebrate some of it, but you also say that there could be some serious economic consequences.
Well, that's true. I mean, when populations first begin to age, it is definitely good for the population. I think Japan illustrates this nicely. Its birth rates began to decline in the 1950s, and if there's fewer children to support, it frees up women from childcare responsibilities. And around the world, we see this phenomenon they call the demographic dividend, generally falling fertility when it first starts is associated with economic prosperity. But then there's another turn of the screw if the population trend continues. And then the next generation, you're seeing a shrinking work base and more retirees depending on that work base. And I think you'd be hard put to find any country in the world today that is experiencing rapid population aging or much less decline and having any kind of economic prosperity at all. We were talking about the Great Plains before in the United States. That's an experiment within our own borders of what can happen, at least, when populations fall. Population growth gives capitalists more demand for the products that they sell and more supply of the labor that they buy. And it's no surprise that throughout history, capitalism has only flourished in the context of population growth.
Peter Kostmeier?
Well, I think the opposite is true. Those countries which are experiencing rapid population growth are countries which are really in trouble. As Phil has said, they're primarily in sub-Saharan Africa. Those countries which have begun to stabilize their population, this country, for example, countries of Western Europe, are enjoying very strong economic success. So I think the opposite is true. And what we're really in danger of is beginning to think that the problem we face in the world today is declining fertility and not overpopulation. We still face a very serious problem, as Philip has pointed out, in sub-Saharan Africa, for example, where most of the women in their childbearing years have no access to family planning at all. These are societies which are growing. They're not stable. They're not strong. They're not producing strong economies. Those societies which have begun to stabilize and even reduce population growth are countries which are really growing. We have about 283 million people in the United States today. If we were to reach population stabilization and stabilize our population at, say, 200 million, I don't think most Americans would think that's a bad thing. I think it's probably a good thing.
Well, they would think it was a good thing until they realized that their Social Security checks were bouncing and that their Medicare program was under even more strain than it is today. It's very appealing to think, oh, couldn't we just go back to the world we knew in the early 1960s? There'd be just that many fewer people. It'd be that much easier for me to get my beachfront house. But that's not really the alternative we face, because to go from here to there is to change the population dynamic entirely. The growth of population that we're facing in the world today is almost entirely growth of old people. The number of children in the world starts to decline in absolute terms within 10 years. By 2050, according to the United Nations, there's 35 million fewer children and 1.2 billion more elderly. So that's the world we have to envision, not a world of 1960s population.
I know you want to come back. Let's make I wanted to get some more listeners involved in the conversation. Now, Gary's with us on the line from St. Louis.
Yes, this is what Mr. Longman has just said at the beginning of the program, I think, is totally inaccurate. He said we've not experienced the devastation of overpopulation, and that seems to be a very incorrect view, given the immense habitat loss and the extinction of species that is going on now that's greater than any time in historical times. The oceans have been laid barren. They're contaminated. We have water and resource issues. And we don't see it much in this country, but when you follow news around the world, these are devastating things that are happening. And to have this, what I view as an irresponsible and tunnel view of population that emphasizes financial concerns over these massive environmental issues seems to be terribly off the mark. I think it would be extremely dangerous for us to carry, let me put it this way, if a scientist would propose, let's do an experiment and see what the maximum carrying capacity of Earth is, what's the maximum population of human beings we can put on this planet, they would probably be shouted down or thrown in an insane asylum, and yet we've been carrying on that experiment for decades now, and it's devastating.
Yeah, Philip Longman, Gary makes a point. Economic impacts of our still growing billions has certainly had economic and as well as many other effects.
Well, I would invite you to just contemplate what exactly is the relationship between population growth and environmental destruction. Consider the example of Japan, for example, that has about 10 times the population density of the United States and uses half as much energy per person. Why is that? Is that a coincidence? I mean, it's not a coincidence. The very population density that Japan has allows it to have a much less auto-dependent economy, one in which people run around in high-speed rail and subways, and it's producing per person much less global warming than sprawled out America with its automobiles. It's the growth of automobiles, the population growth of automobiles that's the problem in the United States, not the population growth of people. I'm not denying that we have to do a lot to mitigate the strain we're putting on this environment. It's awful, and I stand to no one on standing up for environmental rights. But just be careful when you think concretely about what population is contributing to those problems and what technology is.
Congressman, is there a direct relationship between growing population and increased environmental impact?
Oh, absolutely. I live in New York City now, but I come from a place in Pennsylvania called Bucks County, Pennsylvania, where the population is growing. We're losing 100 acres of farmland in Bucks County every 7 days. I don't think you can separate growing population from the growing numbers of automobiles in the country. That's difficult to do. But just talk about a second about this issue of the quantity of the population versus the quality. Let me give an example. There are 57 million people in Italy. There are 147 million people in Pakistan. But Italy has 13 times the purchasing power of Pakistan because people are earning a good living. They're educated. They're middle class. They are in control over the number of kids they're having. That's the situation we want to reach. Philip is right about what's happening. The fact is people are having fewer kids, but there's a reason they're having fewer kids. It's because they want fewer kids. Everybody in this country, not everybody, but most people in this country are having fewer kids. Most people in the world are having fewer kids. There's a very good reason. He may try to turn that around through economic incentives. People are having fewer kids because they're making more money, because they're better educated. That's a good thing, not a bad thing.
Let's get another caller on the line. Jeff is with us from South Bend, Indiana.
Hi. I would just like to, first of all, thank you guys for addressing this issue. Something that's been on my mind a lot lately.
We're having a little trouble with your phone, Jeff.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
Better, yes.
Okay. I just wanted to thank you for addressing this issue today. It's been something that's been on my mind a lot recently. My wife and I started to have children a couple years ago. We're both in our early 30s. I'm a journalist. She's a social worker. And for years, we always envisioned ourselves having a large family, say 3, 4, maybe even 5 children, just because we both love kids so much. But we've realized that it's just not economically feasible. You know, we don't want to work the kind of hours that our parents worked, and we want to have more time with our kids. And so we are going to stop at just having these 2 children. And so I just wanted to, I guess, say that I sort of agree with Mr. Longman's approach here, and that it's And I think whether this is a good or a bad thing for society at large, I know it's a bad thing for me and for my wife because we're really disappointed.
There's a lot of people like Jeff, aren't there, Philip?
Well, surveys show that American women now coming to the end of their reproductive age do, as a group, wish they had had more children than they wound up having. It's even more dramatic in Europe, where if the average woman in her 40s today had been able to have as many children as she says she wants today, there would be no prospect of population aging and decline. Sweden wouldn't be cutting its pension benefits. There wouldn't be rioting in the streets of France over how to roll back their welfare state. And people would have had the number of children that they wanted, which turns out, by the way, to be about 2.1, which is just about what's needed for steady population.
Mm-hmm.
So people kind of instinctively want to have the right number of kids. It's just that they're not getting to do it.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, thanks very much for the call, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Doesn't this balance out over time, though? After you go through the graying of the population, you come out the other side, don't you?
We don't know because we've never done this before. One of the things that's very different now is the developing world is aging so rapidly. Countries like the United States got rich before they got old. Places like India and Iran and Mexico are getting old before they get rich. We've never seen the kind of hyper aging that's going to happen in Mexico, for example. And so it's just impossible to say how it all works out. It may turn out, though, to be a boon to fundamentalism. Because if people who are motivated by economic incentives aren't having children, it'll be people who are indifferent to economic incentives who will have what children are born. And I think there is a sort of built-in tendency around the world for people who are motivated by religious authority to be creating or filling this empty cradle.
Hmm. Email question from Alex in Berkeley. While population decline in the U.S. Would be a problem, couldn't that be mitigated by allowing more immigration from regions that are truly overpopulated? That's one of the things that you've suggested, Congressman.
Well, sure, and I think that's a good thing. I think immigration has long been the heart and soul of this country, and it's very worthwhile. It's strictly controlled, but I think that's part of the answer. But, of course, I would disagree with your correspondent who suggests that we're in a dangerous situation because our population is declining, that the absolute numbers of people are going down. If on average a couple has 2.1 kids, you reach something called replacement level if you maintain that for 70 years, and then you reach something called ZPG, zero population growth, where you continue to rejuvenate your population, but you don't increase the pure numbers of people. That's what we're after. Our name used to be ZPG. Now it's Population Connection. That's what we're after. And I think you're right. I think it will balance out. It always balances out. And the issue of Social Security is not going to be answered by people having more kids. It's a political issue. It's a difficult one. It needs to be resolved. But the answer is not skyrocketing birth rates.
We are speaking with, former Representative Peter Kostmeyer. He's the president of what he now calls the Population Connection. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Philip Longman is also with us. His new book is The Empty Cradle, How Falling Birth Rates Threaten World Prosperity and What to Do About It. And he's also with us in the studio. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get a caller on the line. This is Robert, who's with us from Regensburg in Bavaria.
Hi, I just like to point out that you know we have six children and we're over in Germany, and it's very interesting to you know to be in a country where they don't you know they're not even replacing themselves, and it's quite interesting the comments we get. People count us quite often wherever we go, but I also think it's interesting that four white men are you know surmising what women in Africa how many children they should be having. I think that's very arrogant. And there's an absolute value that many people place on a human life, and that value outranks anything else, and you haven't really discussed that.
I think, Robert, to be fair, we're discussing what women in Africa are doing about their child rates, and it may be arrogant or not.
What they ought to be doing.
Well, that may be a judgment you want to make, but did you want to address that, Philip?
Well, I would just say that if one looks at the mortality rates, I mean, to get into this game he accuses me of, but to look at the mortality rates in Africa, which are so high because of AIDS, you know, even there, we may be looking at the prospect of population decline, you know, within our lifetimes. I mean, 2.1 children are needed per woman in our society. And in Sierra Leone, it's like more closer to four. Just because of the amount of infant mortality and strife in society. You know, we're seeing the growth of huge megacities in the third world that are vectors for disease. We've seen infectious disease spreading throughout the world, the SARS virus being the latest harbinger. So I think there's a real chance that we can't that we may need more babies than we even know.
Let's get another caller on the line. Susan's with us from Cary, North Carolina.
Hi. I just wanted to say I think a lot of people have maybe two children because they don't want to be outnumbered. It's not economic. I'm serious. Everybody, I don't want to be outnumbered.
Don't want to get outvoted in the car.
Well, you know, you've got one parent for each child, and you know, we're the generation that was probably a little bit ignored by our family, and now we dote on our children. We do all sorts of things for them. That it's for us, it wasn't economics. It was just we didn't want to be outnumbered. It's a matter of management. It's not easy raising children. And I'm a stay-at-home mom, which I know I'm kind of an anomaly, but I was 35 when I started having my children, too. I had a career, and because of a transfer, I became a stay-at-home mom, which I'm very happy about. It wasn't in the plan, but it all worked out. So I think you've got a lot of people, maybe in my generation, because I'm 45, that, you know, had a career, then you have children, then you start running out of runway.
Well, Susan, thanks very much. Good luck with them, and you may find you're outvoted anyway some of the time.
Right. Well, we might adopt, so that's another option, too, when you get older. Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
The last two calls, we just have a couple of minutes left. I'd like you know, obviously, different people make different choices for lots of different reasons. Individuals and beliefs are very different. But nevertheless, both of you have discussed some of the prescriptions for this involving government incentives of various kinds, and they're complicated to go into and probably outside the scope of this discussion. But Philip, you suggest the government should do things to give people incentives to have more children.
Well, I don't think it's fair that parents have to pay Social Security taxes. And parental investment is what funds the Social Security system, ultimately. And then to turn around and say, having invested $200,000 in direct expenses in your kid and maybe $1 million in foregone wages, that you also need to pay payroll taxes, I think is imprudent in a society that's consuming more human capital than it's producing.
And Peter Kostmeyer, should governments be providing these kinds of incentives, whatever they may be? And again, they're complicated.
Well, this government should be providing what the governments of Western Europe provide, which is universal access to family planning. And our objective is universal access to family planning. And our view is that the world is growing at an alarming rate, and that it's not a question, as your caller from Germany said, of what women ought to do. It's giving them the power to do what they want to do. And the fact of the matter is that there are millions of women without any option of family planning at all, and we need to begin to stabilize world population for a wide variety of reasons.
Peter Kostmeyer, president of Population Connection, former congressman from Bucks County, Pennsylvania. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And also our thanks to Philip Longman. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Philip Longman is the author of The Empty Cradle, a senior fellow at the bipartisan think tank, the New America Foundation. When we come back from a short break, a change of tone for the Pulitzer Prize in Music. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.